Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And we couldn't talk about taboos today without talking about drugs. As an overnight crime reporter for the Washington Post, Ruben Castañeda covered shootings, robberies, murders. He was even present when recently deceased Marion Barry, the infamous former D.C. mayor, was busted using crack cocaine in a hotel room. But Ruben had a secret of his own. He was a crack addict himself. His experiences and the stories of others affected by the 1980s crack epidemic are detailed in his book, S Street Rising. And he joins us now. Ruben, welcome to Latino USA.
Very good to be here.
So, Ruben, you came to D.C. from L.A., where you grew up, and you actually first used crack when you were in L.A. When did you realize that you were one of those people who was addicted to crack after just one try?
I never imagined that I would become an addict, somebody who couldn't stop. And in fact, I didn't use crack a second time for another 2 or 3 weeks, even though it was such a tremendous euphoric high. But I did go back and I made a buy on my own. And at that point, it became a regular part of my life. And by the time I moved to Washington, D.C., a year later to work for the Washington Post, it was an integral part of my life and something that I worked very hard to hide from other people.
What was it inside of you that just said, well, it's now when I'm going to reveal that I too was a crack addict? A lot of people might have just said, you know what, I've been there, I've done that, I'm over it, and I don't want to talk about it. What made you want to talk about it so publicly?
I guess I came out as a crack addict in an article in the Washington Post magazine that was published in December of 2007. At the time, I was assigned to Prince George's County, Maryland, where I was writing many, many stories about police brutality and other forms of corruption. And at some point in the spring of that year, I'd received an anonymous email. I'm certain it was from a county police officer who taunted me about a run-in I'd had with the LAPD about 20 years earlier. It was the sort of information that only somebody in law enforcement could have accessed with a law enforcement computer. So that made me realize that if somebody was willing to do that, which is a federal offense, what might they do if they found out that I had been hospitalized for crack addiction? So that made me realize that I should probably tell my own narrative rather than take the chance that somebody else would try to use it against me. And I just felt like there was space to write something that was true and honest.
So I have to tell you, Ruben, one of the things that actually was deeply upsetting to me as I was reading your book and actually made me angry was the whole relationship between yourself and the women who you call strawberries. And these are the women who basically would trade sex for crack. On the one hand, they kind of seem, they were clearly central to your life in this moment when you were a crack addict. And yet, we don't really know anything about them except that on many times you think they looked pretty. They were like nameless, faceless women. And that was really hard for me. What do you think about that, about this notion that, you know, even in your book, they were just kind of women who didn't deserve a whole lot of time or attention?
Well, I did provide one passage that told the story of one of these young ladies who actually became a murder victim. I knew her by one name, but when her story and photograph came out on the front page of the Washington Post, I learned about her life, how she had been a good athlete in high school and had been well-liked, and how her parents had worried about her. I think her father had been a D.C. police officer, none of which she and I ever talked about during our encounters. These were strictly transactional encounters where I would pick up somebody to make the buys for me. By that time, I was usually drunk, and I just wanted to get onto the street and off the street as quickly as possible. As far as going back to try to interview any of these young ladies to include in the book, I think that would have been pretty much impossible because I had nicknames and first names. I've not seen any of these individuals for probably 20 to 22 years. So I did the best I could with that, and I think I described honestly in the book that these relationships were strictly transactional in nature. It was an awful way to live, and it was really like being caught in the middle of a maelstrom, my own and that of the city, because the city was spiraling out of control with the crack cocaine trade and the violence that went with it. At the same time, my own life was spiraling out of control. They were out there trying to feed their habit. I was out there trying to feed my habit, and we interacted at that point. My intent was not to harm any of them, but looking back, yes, it was a terrible way to live. If I could see any of them today, I would tell them that I'm sorry that I behaved in the way I did. I hope that they're okay, but I have no way of knowing.
So, Ruben, you grew up in Los Angeles, in Boyle Heights, a very Latino LA. But that meant that when you moved to Washington, D.C., you were pretty much the odd Latino out in a city that back then was pretty much, you know, focused on the black-white dynamic, with the exception of Salvadorians who were now just getting into Washington, D.C. in mid-1980s. So how did that dynamic play into your mindset and your behavior, both as a reporter and as a crack addict?
I think there were probably fewer than five other Latinos at the Post when I got there. There might have been a couple more. I think that just added to my sense of isolation. Using alcohol and drugs in an abusive manner is a good way to isolate oneself. On some level, I knew that I was heading down a disastrous path, but I tried to keep that behavior as secret from my friends as long as I could, and my family. I compartmentalized as best I could. And being the only, you know, often the only Latino in the newsroom at a given time, you know, I'd look to my left, to my right, and, you know, there might be myself and one or two others. I think that did add to the sense of isolation, which was already there in a dramatic fashion because of my alcoholism and addiction. And also, when I moved to D.C., I didn't know anybody. I moved from Los Angeles. I had worked at the Herald Examiner, which was a great place to work. And all my friends and family at the time were in California. So I moved to D.C. not knowing a single individual. So, yeah, and then working the night shift when it's just a skeleton crew, that added to the sense of isolation as well.
How's your family?
Well, my family's doing fine there. I lost my father 4 years ago, so it's my mom and my siblings, and I've got nieces and a nephew and a lot of cousins, and they're all in California, and they're all doing well. And I was concerned about how they would react to my writing about some of the worst moments in my life, which they didn't know the details of. But so far, the reaction has been quite positive. My relatives, just like my friends, they're glad that I made it out, and they accept me for who I am and who I've been since they've known me.
Well, we're happy to hear that, Ruben, and we're so happy that they do still love you. Thanks so much for your work.
Thank you.
Ruben Castañeda is a former reporter for The Washington Post and author of S Street Rising, Crack, Murder, and Redemption in D.C.